It's 1240. You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on member-supported public radio, WILL AM 580. I'm Craig Cohen. Our technical director is Jason Croft. Yesterday, we heard about an agreement between the McLean County Sheriff's Department and federal immigration officials. The county will hold non-citizens who are arrested in the local jail for up to 2 days on behalf of the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency. The agency can then decide if that person could be deported. As Illinois Public Media's Sean Powers reports, it's an agreement that isn't unusual across the country.
Just about the entire country follows a similar policy called Secure Communities. It began as a pilot program in 2008 at the end of the George W. Bush administration, and it has expanded during the Obama administration. Under the program, once a person is arrested and brought to a local jail, their fingerprints are scanned and transmitted to the FBI and forwarded to the Department of Homeland Security. The U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, or ICE, can then request a law enforcement agency to hold that person for up to 48 hours in a jail cell while ICE determines if they're eligible to be deported. ICE Director John Morton says current and past criminal history and other repeated immigration violations all factor into that decision. Here he is testifying recently before Congress.
Well, who are these people that we are identifying removing prior to conviction? In the overwhelming majority of cases, people that have already been removed from the country and have come back again unlawfully, or they're people who've already been through the immigration system, have a final order, and ignored that final order.
ICE says Secure Communities has helped remove more than 151,000 people, including more than 55,000 convicted of major violent offenses, such as murder, rape, and the sexual abuse of children. But critics say people who are committing minor traffic offenses are being detained by ICE. And even if they're not deported, they're separated from their families while they're held at an immigration detention facility. Champaign County is part of Secure Communities. Last December, a group called the CU Immigration Forum held a public meeting in Champaign to discuss the county's implementation of Secure Communities and problems it had with the program. More than 125 people showed up. Aaron Johnson Ortiz, a member of the CU Immigration Forum, addressed the crowd.
In its one-year implementation in Champaign County, it has been plagued by problems.
Based on an analysis of 45 non-citizen arrests held on ICE holds in Champaign County within a year, 95% identified as Hispanic. Charges were dropped in about 25% of the cases, and looking at all of the cases, more than a fifth were arrested for traffic violations. That includes people driving on a suspended license and driving an uninsured vehicle. Johnson Ortiz listed several concerns he and others shared about Secure Communities, including separating families, using up jail space and tax dollars to house ICE detainees, and encouraging racial profiling.
Champaign can stop all holds. This can happen tomorrow morning if Sheriff Walsh wants to. All that is required is political will. It would deeply ameliorate. This is destroying our families. It's wasting dollars. It was implemented deceptively. We can stop this right now.
3 months after the forum, that's exactly what Champaign County did. Sheriff Dan Walsh told federal officials the county would no longer honor detainer requests by immigration officials to hold inmates under the Secure Communities program. He said inmates would only be turned over by warrant or court order. Walsh declined to be interviewed for this story. Even though Champaign County is no longer cooperating with the detainer requests, it is one of 26 Illinois counties currently enrolled in the program. From 2009 through the start of this year, the Department of Homeland Security says about 3,000 people were arrested in these counties and taken into ICE custody. 27% committed felonies or misdemeanors, and 26% crimes punishable by less than 1 year in prison. The remaining half broke immigration law by violating the terms of their visa, entering the United States without inspection, or refusing to leave the U.S. after being ordered to do so. These people may have criminal convictions, but none confirmed by ICE.
I do not believe it makes communities any safer.
That's Democratic State Representative Toni Berrios of Chicago. She sponsored legislation to halt Secure Communities in Illinois, pending further study. Berrios says too many people are being detained, and that's creating distrust between immigrant communities and the police.
How many murders did we have here in Chicago just this weekend? Those are the criminals that we need to be going after, not individuals who are here trying to make a better life for their family, and while driving on their way to work, making that right-hand turn on a red light.
Originally, states could choose to join secure communities, but by the end of next year, ICE says it expects to roll out the program nationwide. Illinois and Alabama are the only states that haven't activated it statewide. After initially opting into it, Illinois Governor Pat Quinn last year said his state would no longer participate out of concerns over how the program was being operated. Illinois counties, like Cook and Champaign, have cooperated with ICE detainer requests, but also have taken a step back. In Lake County, which is a secure community, Sheriff Mark Curran says the program creates unnecessary fear among people living in the United States legally, and it doesn't address a much larger issue, comprehensive immigration reform.
Whether you're involved in secure communities or not, there is no difference. There's no distinguishing. And, I can't emphasize that more. We did not see any difference in deportations from when we participated in secure communities to prior to when we did.
Do you feel it's mainly a political stunt?
You know, it's out on the street. These people see their relatives being deported or their friends being deported. And, you know, they seem to think that, you know, it's secure communities has become the bad guy. Well, it's not. It's an immigration system that's broken.
Curran continues to honor ICE holds, and he says he has no plans to stop. Meanwhile, with ICE's plans to activate secure communities nationwide by the end of next year, there are questions about the rights of states that choose not to enforce the policy. In addition to Illinois, the governors of New York, Massachusetts, and Connecticut have stated their opposition to secure communities. Muzaffar Chizni of the nonpartisan Migration Policy Institute says he doesn't believe challenging the legality of the program would hold up in court. But he says voices of opposition can still have some reach.
You know, these are all powerful governors. These are important democratic states with important views that will be heard by the federal government, is that they will use their power to make sure that the federal government establishes priorities that only high-yielding criminals should be the target of this program.
ICE Director John Morin says his agency has made strides to improve secure communities by encouraging more discretion about traffic arrests and setting up a 24-hour hotline for people who believe they were wrongfully detained or held too long.
We have a limited number of detention beds, and so the question is, do we focus our resources on somebody who just came across the border 2 years ago as opposed to somebody who came across 10 years, now has two United States citizen children? If I have to pick between putting a criminal in detention or somebody who's been here a very long time, I'm going to pick the criminal every time.
When asked if ICE plans to sue states that don't comply with secure communities by the end of next year, a spokeswoman says the agency has not sought to require compliance into the program through legal proceedings, though she says ignoring agency requests could lead to public safety risks. I'm Sean Powers, Illinois Public Media.
And now something that NFL football fans and reporters did not expect to hear, National Football League Commissioner Roger Goodell apologizing. The commissioner today apologized to fans for having to use replacement officials during a lockout of regular refs. The impasse led to 3 weeks of questionable calls and one that cost the Green Bay Packers a win. Goodell made his comments earlier today during a conference call about 12 hours after the referees' union and league agreed on a tentative deal that will allow the regular officials to return beginning with tonight's Browns-Ravens game. Goodell said, quote, "Something like this, it's painful for everybody. Most importantly, it's painful for fans. We're sorry to have put fans through that." He added, "Sometimes you have to go through something like that in the short term for the right agreement for the long term." The deal with the union refs was struck 2 days after Seattle's chaotic last-second win over Green Bay, in which the replacement refs appeared to miss at least one and maybe two calls on the final play of the game, both of which would have negated the touchdown called for Seattle. That was the difference in the football game.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 27th of September, 2012. It's the birthday of the poet Kay Ryan, born San Jose, 1945. Father was restless. He was a truck driver, an oil driller. He dug septic tanks, tried mining for gold. At one point, family never had much money. Ryan said that her mother would have liked to be married to the mailman who was happy in his lot and retired after 30 years with a mailman's pension. Family was constantly uprooted. The girl found it hard to get close to people. She resolved at one point to talk to one person a day who wasn't my mother or my brother. Went to community college and then followed a favorite professor to UCLA, majored in English, got her PhD, and then set off on a 4,000-mile bike trip with a friend along the coast of Oregon and California. She kept a daily journal. She was trying to see if she really wanted to write. She described the feeling as like trying not to fall in love with somebody. You are, but you don't want to. But in the end, she decided that writing gave her pleasure like nothing else. Her first collection came out in 1983, Dragon Acts to Dragon Ends. She settled in Marin County, and she got herself a part-time job so she would have the time she needed to write. She has been teaching remedial English part-time at the College of Marin for more than 40 years now. Her most recent book is The Best of It, New and Selected Poems. It's the birthday of Thomas Nast, the cartoonist, born in Landau, Germany, 1840, came to this country when he was 6 years old, studied art, and got a job as a cartoonist with Harper's Weekly. Thomas Nast was the first cartoonist to have the platform of a weekly national magazine, and it was he who created the modern image of Santa Claus and the donkey and the elephant of the Democratic and Republican parties. And it was he who helped to bring down the corrupt leader of Tammany Hall in New York City, Boss Tweed. Nast published cartoons depicting Tweed as a bloated, thuggish politician. And when Tweed was thrown out in the election of 1871 and escaped from jail and fled to Vigo, Spain, it was the caricature of him by Thomas Nast that led to his discovery and arrest by authorities. Here's a poem for today by Sharon Dunn, entitled Jeans. My 11-year-old son wants to fish. He owns two rods, one saltwater, one freshwater. He loves knives, Bowie knives, Swiss Army knives. Knives like this one, my brother says, opening his desk drawer and taking out a small jackknife with antler handle. My boy camps outdoors, begs to sleep outside, is always shooting arrows, rubber band guns. He is lashing together a fort in the backyard. He sails, swims, kayaks, and wants to know the